The following episode of TOEFOP is rated MA for mature audiences. It may contain sexual references, time travel references, allegations of binge misconduct, and mild coarse language. TOEFOP advises that this episode is not suitable for anyone under the age of 15 or anyone who thinks a comedy conversation between two old mates sounds like a terrible idea for a show. Minors must be accompanied by a parent or guardian. This is John Deek speaking.
Everyone relax, this is TOEFOP. I'm Charlie Clawson.
I'm Will Anderson.
And what people don't see at home, Will, is how bad I am at reading ads. Like, this is actually something I'm paid to do professionally, doing voiceovers and stuff like that. But something happens in the TOEFOP room when I'm trying to read a script. It doesn't work.
Okay, so that is interesting to me. So, because I sit here for it.
Yeah.
And I try to be encouraging because, firstly, people might have realized that you do a lot of the heavy lifting when it comes to, you know, the ad reads for the shows. You're doing all the technical stuff. I'm mostly
chipping in.
I'm your sort of
Friday night funny man.
I'm your wrestling commentator just doing the reaction stuff. That's I'm just like, oh, I can't believe you did that. That's basically my role in the ad reads, is to bring a little color to the table.
What would be great if, like a wrestling commentator, you were just deliberately kind of like supporting the villain, like taking a contradictory point of view, just to kind of like give it some light and shade.
Just mentioning.
Heckling me, basically.
Bringing up opposition products.
Yes.
Going, well, there are other telephone networks, for example, might have been the ad that we just read a few times.
Yeah, no, sure. Look, we to all the sponsors out there and potential sponsors, like we'll get the job done. But there is Podcast Mike has a bucket of outtakes of me stumbling over so many words and getting my tongue tied. I think it's something about the environment. Like when I'm in a booth doing a professional voiceover ad read, maybe it's just my mind shifts. I'm like, well, this is professional job, and so I'm going to act real professional. I'm going to do some vocal warm-ups and get really like focused on this. But then I'm in here and we're joking and laughing, and it's taking us 10 minutes to find the email, and then I get started. It's like I've got to bring more of that professional attitude to TOEFOP, I think.
Well, this is what I'm interested in because, as you said, Podcast Mike has often, it'll come out when some disgruntled employee is fired from some show or, you know, that sort of thing. They're suddenly
that's when the Peter Russell Clark tape
suddenly gets released. You know,
fuck this, fuck that.
Donald Trump allegedly saying the N-word on the set of The Apprentice, which never actually came out, but apparently there is some recording somewhere. Podcast Mike has that. Of you in particular, and he could put together a very good goof tape of you trying to.
Would it be funny though? Would it be funny to listen to?
Oh no, I'm thinking this is not funny.
No,
I'm thinking he's
humiliating.
Doing this, yeah, just to humiliate you. He sends it. He doesn't even release it publicly. He just sends it to potential advertisers.
I went to a screening, a wrap party of an Australian feature film. Uh-huh. And there was a particularly famous actor involved in this film. I'll tell you about him off air, or her. And there was a sequence they showed, because there's all the bloopers from the film. And it was, he had this big monologue, this kind of heavy monologue where, you know, had to be like all
my
stuff.
He or she.
Yeah, he or she. Thanks. And he obviously was like wanting to, you know, he was doing this monologue, but he was ad-libbing a little bit and throwing a bit of his own stuff in there. And this shit was not sticking. Like, his ad-libs were going nowhere. He was losing focus. He was mumbling. He was, like, asking for prompts constantly. And, like, it was 2 minutes of this, and the audience were dying laughing. Like, all the crew and stuff were pissing themselves. And I looked at this actor, and he was not enjoying it. Later that night, he picked a fight with one of the grips. Or she did. But it was like, oh man, that would suck. I mean, I've been to many rap parties where they've played bloopers and that I've heavily featured in. But this one in particular, I think because he was given it a little extra. Like if you fuck up someone else's lines, then, you know, there's no responsibility. But this was him, you know, exposing something of himself. Like he was drawing on something quite personal with these ad-libs and none of them were working.
Well, that's the difference, isn't it? It's not you just fucking up. So in your version, It's complicated details from an advertising read. It's about deals or terms and conditions, and they're things that you actually have to say perfectly, you know, for the ad copy. It's not just riffing around. So to be honest, if you fuck it up, you don't really feel like personally, other than you just having to do it again, there is any great, you know, opportunity cost. It's probably why the stakes are much lower here.
Yeah.
If you're in a professional studio, you're on someone's clock,
yeah,
you're aware of the fact that, you know, if you don't get it done in a certain amount of time, that's your reputation. Next time it costs the company more money, they'll just get somebody who can nail it much quickly. You look at me and you're like, what the fuck was he doing? It looks like he's still in his pajamas from last night. You've summed me up. It does not matter if I fuck it up. The stakes are much lower, but it's also, it's not your original content.
Yes.
So you're not attached to it.
Yes.
This guy, this actor, who's like, I'm not just an actor.
Or actress.
Or actress. I am a creator or creatress.
Yeah, and I'm going to speak from the heart here.
And he's my gold.
Yeah.
I know this character. I'm inside this character. And yes, there's words on the written page, but I think what comes from my heart is going to be better than your art. But it turned out it was more a fart.
This same dude once, I saw him in an awards show.
Oh, dude.
Oh, dude. And was presenting an award for best director, I think it was, and stormed out to the stage scowling, got up to the podium, said to the person running the audio queue, turn that off, I don't read words other people written for me, I speak straight from the heart.
Uh-huh.
And then went on this light monologue about how, you know, a director, a good director isn't off, you know, standing on an ivory tower barking orders, he's down in the trenches with the other soldiers getting down in the muck. And it's just,
you know what I love about this story is...
Or she.
This... He or she sounds exactly like Russell Crowe. Okay, so
not though.
But it's not.
Yeah.
Because this is what everybody listening knows. Because if it were Russell Crowe, we would immediately go, I've got this great story about Russell Crowe, because that's what the podcast is. So it's somebody who acts very much like Russell Crowe, but is not Russell Crowe, is what I'm getting from this anecdote.
Or she. I think we've covered all our bases there.
Yeah, it's fine. So, okay. So you come in here, podcast mic.
Yeah.
You guys have a falling out. You have some big fight and he just wants to ruin your...
I fire him.
Yeah.
I unfairly fire him for something.
And he wants to just ruin your professional reputation.
Yeah.
So it's not about...
it's pretty hard when you have no reputation to ruin.
But within the industry, if you're doing voiceovers and then suddenly a tape of all the stuff that you fuck up came out, wouldn't that ruin your reputation a bit?
I think so. I think if you say something on a hot mic that is like racist or misogynistic, or that would ruin it. But you not being able to pronounce like terms and conditions, I'd say that most like... you know, producers or agency producers who are, you know, doing radio copy would be like, well, that's all right. We like the sound of his voice. When he does nail it, it sounds good.
Okay. So we're willing to put up with
all that shit. I'd say so. Don't you reckon that would be the case? Like John Deeks, like voice over extraordinaire. That is a one in a million voice. I would put up with, Deeksy does fuck up when he's done voiceovers for us.
Yeah. But how often do you think Deeksy fucks up compared to how often you fuck up? Is it a similar amount? Like, or has he been doing it so long and is such a specialist
that
you could give him like one of our ads to read and he could immediately sight read it and nail it?
I would say he would require as many takes as me. Whenever I've sent him, hey, we're doing this for a live show or we need to refresh the intro, I would say it's normally three or four takes. That he'll, because he will misread words, he'll get the emphasis wrong, sometimes he'll pronounce things incorrectly.
And is that him...
But he'll send
sending all of those?
Yeah.
So he's sending the mistakes as well.
Yeah. Do you remember like the first live show, the second live show we did, I played a whole compilation. I did what you're like hypothesizing podcast mic would do.
This podcast has eaten itself.
Yeah. I played a tape.
Pod will eat itself.
I played a tape of all John Deeks's, like him having a go at doing the intro for the live show, and he kept stuffing it up because he pronounced one thing wrong and then he'd correct that and he'd pronounce something else wrong. And I think he even got the name of the show.
Okay. So this is how good I think John Deeks is though.
Yeah.
I think he's doing that to make us feel good. I think that what actually happens is he goes into the booth, nails it first time, and then goes, oh shit, I can't. I mean, I've heard this podcast. Yeah. I can't, like,
don't embarrass him.
Well, I don't, because I would get, my confidence would go.
Yeah.
Because suddenly you're like, well, he makes it look so easy. Why is it so difficult for us? Yeah. So what he then does is he goes in and he records some bloopers and he actually sends those through just so we feel okay.
I think even the live shows we've done, like he has kind of, I've seen him being like he's walking a tightrope because he's, side of stage is very poorly lit, so he's trying to like announce us and announce our guests and shit, plus also do comedy. Then he'll come onto the stage in between all that and fucking like steal the show. But I was surprised by like, oh shit, like even with how, you know, 30, 40 years of experience, like he still gets a new script and then stumbles through it. So I don't know. I think, I mean, I'll say, here's one thing I'll say. Working with you and working with Osher on Dad Pod, I do look at you guys and go, there is clearly a difference in radio experience in the way you guys and I perform. Like, I think, like, Osh is so professional. Like, Osh, we did an episode last week of Dad Pod that it was all jumbled because we recorded one bit and then we had a guest who was available, so we had to then go to that. So Osh is, his brain is working a million miles an hour, but he's editing the show in his head. But his voice, like the sound of his voice, because he's talking the whole time, still sounds like he's presenting the show. And like, sometimes I get confused. Is this like stuff that's going on air, or is this just you talking to me now? Because he doesn't break stride. And you've also got that thing as well, where once the mic is on, everything that you are throwing out is stuff that could potentially be used or worked into the show. You know what I mean? Whereas I sort of feel like that I still wait for green light, red light or something. Like, maybe that's like a product of being an actor, where there's like, there's like action and cut. You know, whereas you guys are much more, you know, you're public speakers and you do radio, where that is just more a free flowing thing. And it, once the mic is hot, then everything, you know, there's no,
this is the show.
Mulligans. Yeah.
It's on. Hey guys, the content producing minds are open. Grab your pickaxe and produce some content.
Yeah. I think it's just a level of professionalism that you guys have that, I mean, I don't even know that podcasting is even a job, but I think about, you know, well, what am I, how could I get better at this? And I think I need more radio type experience, or more radio kind of flow to the way I do shows.
No, I don't think you do. No, because you work in a, like, I think one of the problems with, you know, podcasting, and when I did Earbuds, the, you know, documentary that Graham Elwood and Chris Mancini made about, you know, podcasting back in the day, in one of the bits they actually use of me in the documentary, I talk about the idea that, you know, podcasting is going to be this brilliant pirate radio thing until the big companies realize, you know, how good it is and come in and ruin it. And I think that we are currently in that moment.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not saying it's being ruined, but it's that now battle for the ground is now between big media companies coming in with like big commercial shows, things that basically in the old days would have been radio shows that they're now releasing as podcasts, or the podcast charts are dominated by actual broadcast radio shows that people are getting paid, you know, hundreds of thousands, let alone millions of dollars to do, with, you know, production crews and audio engineers and all these sort of things. And then they'll cut them up into, you know, 60 shows a week so they can, you know, boast that they dominate the listening market in the podcast world. That's not a podcast to me. That's a radio show that you just broadcast through. Like, if I watch a piece of Tenet on YouTube, Tenet isn't a YouTube clip.
Yeah.
It is a movie that I'm watching on YouTube. And it's the same with those radio shows. No, I think one of the great things about podcasting is that it doesn't sound like radio.
Yeah.
And it was one of my great frustrations getting back into radio, that it can never be as fun as this. You immediately have to moderate what it is that you say.
Yeah. And it doesn't allow you to kind of think your way through a conversation. Like, you sort of have to have your points ready to go and fire them out. Whereas, you know, the long form conversation and the rough edges of around bringing up an idea, exploring it, maybe doubling back, pausing to think about it, all that kind of stuff is...
Well, we've spent the first 20 minutes talking about your incompetence. What else would we have done on this episode? We got a great story about an Australian actor or actress.
Actress, yep. You be the judge.
Hopefully they've got a name that could be a boy's name or a girl's name.
They do.
Yeah. I imagine they might, because I think I've got a pretty good idea who it is.
Yeah, I don't know. I just, maybe it's just that self-critical thing, but, and it's also like, working with someone like Osh, whose voice, like Osh, yeah. Osh has a voice that
he's got a professional broadcaster's voice.
Yeah, that's right. And I guess it's like the Bondi Rescue stuff. It's so familiar that sometimes I'm doing the show with him, and I'm like, I sound like mumbly and whiny, and like I don't have that kind of.
Well, everyone brings different things to the table, though, right?
Yeah, I guess
that's the whole point. is that, you know, Osh brings, well, Deeksy, let's start with Deeksy, right? Like, his great gift is that voice. The voice is what you're buying. Mm. If it takes him six goes to get it right, it, like you said, does not really matter in the end. You're only going to use the one that was great. You're buying the voice. He doesn't have to write the lines. You don't necessarily, it wouldn't matter if he couldn't write anything himself or produce anything himself. You could just buy the voice. Now, there might be also somebody in there who writes their own stuff. Maybe he writes his own stuff, you know, but then they bring that extra thing to the table. You go, well, his voice isn't quite as good as the other guy, but he'll write it all himself. It'll all sound like it's instinctively him. Everybody brings different things to the table. I have a terrible broadcasting voice. Like, my voice is unlistenable, like terrible. Like, yeah, it has none of that depth and resonance. And like, I speak in half sentences and I'm fast and then slow and I get distracted. Like, terrible. But you hope that you bring something else to the table in content production that makes up for the fact that you don't have a very good broadcasting voice.
Is it like hip hop where you have like, you know, a Dr. Dre and an Eminem? So one is kind of the bassier, sort of like more resonant. And then you got the other one sort of hitting like the hi-hat. You know, he's got the more high-pitched
whiny. I'm Eminem, whiny. A whiny bitch. An old guy who's had a lot of success and can't stop whining about the fact that people don't respect it.
It's funny. I had Spotify on random when I was driving over here and Stan came on. It's like, oh, I haven't actually listened to this in a long time. And you know what first struck me about that is that scribbling sound.
Yeah.
In the Stan verses is so intrusive. Like, it's so horrible and dumb. And all I could imagine is like Stan sitting there with a giant oversized novelty pencil, because it's such a... It's
nobody such a, writes like that. Yeah, you're right. No, it's not like he's just like, what the fuck? That's a good point, actually. What the fuck is Stan from the Stan clip writing with?
A pencil.
To make that noise. But like
a giant Mr. Squiggle.
Because what he's actually writing, like when M is rapping it, is quite intelligible. Mm. But the viciousness of how he's writing it, there's no way. It'd just be fucking lines on the paper.
But I just got me thinking about how the production of that song must have gone. Like, at some point, Dr. Dre's like, it's missing something. Yeah. Pencil scratches. Mm. We need pencil scratches. And I think that at the time, probably sounded good, but it's a bit like when you listen to any song, pop song from the early 2000s, there's always like a breakdown. We hear a record scratch for no reason. Like, it's just like, we need a record scratch just before we go to the chorus, record scratch. So I think it's like, it sounds incredibly dated and almost like, because the lyrics are so full on, because that's the other thing I hadn't really thought about in a long time, is like the content of what Stan is doing and his self-harm and then, you know, his girlfriend and all that kind of horrible shit that's going on. Then you got this big cartoon pencil scratching over the top. It's like, it's just, I don't know. It was just, it felt like very juvenile in a way. Like, I guess he was a young man when he created this song.
But also, it's quite a complex song. But it's interesting to me now, because now the term Stan has become
part of the popular lexicon. A term of affection.
In a good way. Yeah. So I think it went through a transition where, like, Stan meant in internet culture, as far as I know, and again, I'm an old man trying to explain internet culture, but I believe it was memes. But like, to Stan something was to be a full-on fan of something. But it's softened and broadened in its meaning now, whereas people will use it in a, like, people who
would Stan Beyonce.
Who wouldn't probably know the reference to the song.
Yeah.
And wouldn't know that it's not a happy ending in the song.
Well, is it that, or is it just maybe like people were desensitized to like horrorcore kind of lyrics, you know, when this is a song about an obsessive fan who kidnaps
I stand Beyonce in the way that I would like to write her some really, really obsessive letters and then kill myself.
Well, it's also like the third verse or the verse where he's recording it on the tape. Like, it's actually the first two verses are really quite affecting, because it's, you know, it's sad and it's this lonely guy, you know, who didn't know his father and just identifies with Eminem so much and blah, blah, blah. And then the third act, when he's in the car and he's recording on the tape, I'm like, all right, now it's become a Michael Bay movie. Like, like, now, shit, we need a device to justify how he can be in the car but still write the lyrics. So we'll give him a tape recorder. We'll give him a tape recorder and he's going to tell you exactly what, like, that last bit where he's like, oh, shit, I forgot. How am I going to send this shit out? It's like, Why? Stan, why did you say that?
Well, it is the sort of thing that you might say, one might say in that situation. Just it, hadn't thought it through.
But it has the unintended consequences of being kind of funny. You're like, oh, Stan. Well, Stan always mucking up. You forgot that you're going to send the tape out.
The news is, though, that apparently they found the car, found the cassette, and still sent it to Eminem.
No, they didn't. That's the other thing.
Oh, what is the, yeah, what's the plot device there?
Well, because when he's saying, hey, listen, man, like, you need to chill out and be nice to your girlfriend, and I'm sorry that I was late sending you the autograph, blah, 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 but you don't want to do crazy shit, because I was reading in the news the other day about this guy who, oh, wait a minute.
Hang on, that's right. I forgot. That's
they
right.
said they found a tape that didn't say who it was to. Come to think of it, it was you.
It was you.
You idiot, Stan. How are you going to send that tape out? Did you think about that?
It's lucky I happened to be reading news.com.au the other day.
So what was Stan's plan with recording the tape?
The Stan plan.
The Stan plan. So his plan was to kidnap and murder him and his girlfriend, right? And so he was going to record this final tape to say, you drove me to do this, Em. Your negligence to your biggest fan. Yeah. But he must have had a plan for getting the tape out. If he's going to drive the car over the bridge, that's not...
No, he didn't. He forgot about it.
But he must have thought about it because he bought the dictaphone.
He bought the dictaphone.
But he must have thought, he had to have thought it through, right? Like, I'm going to kidnap my girlfriend and I can't write while I'm driving, so I'm going to record the tape. Uh-huh. So he just didn't think through the end of it.
I reckon he just had a lot on his plate. It's like, I'm going to have to find a bridge.
Well, sometimes he cuts himself just to see how much he bleeds. The pain's like adrenaline. Adrenaline or something is like a pain, sudden rush for him. Yeah, it holds up, that song, but it's... It does make me think that this was a pop song in the early 2000s with the most full-on, like, upsetting lyrics that people were kind of playing on the commercial radio, and Elton John did a duet with him at the Grammys. And
I mean, it's...
I wonder if it would get cancelled now if you could release that song now, considering the subject matter.
Like, but this is what he raps about. I've been listening to the B-side to Music to be Murdered By, or whatever it is called. That double album, because it's basically that's what it is. It's a double album. He's released like a second album, but it's like a double album. And I think it's actually probably his best work.
Really?
Now he just doesn't give a shit anymore. He's just...
He doesn't give a shit anymore?
Well, as in he's just...
He's not trying to have a number one single.
Doing it for him, right, to show off. To just like go, look at what I can do. And every song is just like, squaring off with somebody. Like, literally there's one track called Book of Rhymes. I'm emptying out my Book of Rhymes. And that's what it feels like. You're like, he's just got all this stuff and he's just going to use it. And I love that. But this was a different Eminem back then. That's like an incredible story, Stan. Like, it really is.
But do you think it would... Like, do you think it would get, like, things get cancelled retrospectively all the time? Do you think if...
But I think he is, like, they've tried to cancel him so many times, Columbine and Ariana Grande, and every time, that's just part of his shtick.
What do you mean Ariana? What happened with Ariana?
He had a lyric about an Ariana Grande concert, you know.
Oh, right, the bombing.
He's got one on
it's
every...
It's kind of like, do you think he's in South Park territory where it's like, he's offended everyone.
Can't
so,
cancel him.
Yeah. Because he's cancelled himself numerous times.
And his shtick is being that also. Like, unless something really terrible came out. I guess Marilyn Manson is a good example, right? Like, where if there was like real life thing that had like a big case against him, then in that way. But I think through his art, is there anything that Eminem could say now that he hasn't already said? No, I don't think
there is. I mean, it is interesting. It got me thinking... We were talking last week about Romper Stomper, and you were asking that question about, Hando in Romper Stomper is such a charismatic character, and you sort of find yourself like, you know, not rooting for him, but at least like admiring him. He's so charismatic and stuff. And I was like, well, you know, we create art and we tell stories to explore everything, right? And sometimes the stuff that we want to explore is the darker side of life, and that's clearly what Stan is. You know, it's a story about like a super obsessive, depressed kind of guy who does a terrible thing. And the idea of canceling it because of the subject matter, as opposed to canceling it because the intent of the subject matter, seems crazy. But I feel like we're sort of on that tipping point now where people are not differentiating between the intent of the thing that's being created and then the content of the.
So I think. Whether this is retroactively or retrospectively, what I like about you know, what he's doing with Music to Be Murdered By and Music to Be Buried By, I think is what they're called. So the whole conceit is that there's Alfred Hitchcock tracks in between, which are real. And what he's saying, at least to me, is I'm Alfred Hitchcock. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. I create these murder stories, but I'm not a murderer. I create these, and like the whole idea of Music to Be Murdered By is meant to say, this is not me being edgy, like I'm actually murdering. I'm creating this universe where I can tell these, you know, dark stories of my alter ego and all these sort of things, and really putting it on Front Street that this is what it is. To the point where on this B-Sides album, he literally, one of his raps is just over the Alfred Hitchcock Presents theme. Like, it's just a loop of that theme, and he just raps over the top of it. And so I think he's created a world in which, like, it's not like you watch Breaking Bad and think that Vince Gilligan, like,
is a meth dealer,
right? Like, it's a world he's created that he tells stories within. And I think that's different to, like, somebody.
But there's always that moral reaction. Like, there's I've been watching this a documentary series on Netflix about video games, and one of the episodes is about when violent video games really took off with like Street Fighter, and then Mortal Kombat kicked it up a notch, and then Doom and first person shooters and stuff. And you know, there was this kind of moral panic, and you know, they huge like Senate hearings in the US about classifications on video games, and they were speaking to all the creators who were all like young, predominantly men in, you know, the 90s. And they were saying
the 2000s and the 2010s, and also now.
But they were sort of saying, like, in the same way that people freaked out about, you know, the satanic panic about heavy metal in the 70s, they're like, no, this is stuff we're interested in, and it's an expression. And this is just, we grew up, you know, watching action movies and, you know, listening to like heavy metal and, you know, and horror comics and all this kind of stuff.
And this is our point. This is the point we're making, is that we said that the music was no good, and it's led to this, and now it's led to these video games. You're proving our point.
But there is this idea that they interview this one kid on the street who's playing Mortal Kombat, and it's like Fox News or someone. It's kind of trying to be a gotcha kind of thing. Like, you know, playing this video, do you get off on like killing people? And the kid's like, no, like, this is where I come to let all that stuff out. But, you know, isn't it better that I'm doing it here than going into the street and like acting out those urges? I'm like, yeah, I kind of see a point to that.
Yeah, I agree with that. But
you got to let fantasy.
But when does fantasy become reality? So this is a pretty dark topic, so I apologize that my brain's gone here, but I just think it's, if that's the logic, right? You give people this thing to be able to do at home so that they don't do it in real life. There was a story recently about somebody who got arrested with a
sex doll.
Underage sex doll, right? Now, the argument for not being able to do that is that it might encourage that behavior. That
normalizes
it. It means that they get used to it in that situation, then they might, you know, do it out in public, right? So that's kind of the same argument. You know, you can make the argument, the video game argument of just going, well, like, maybe this will just keep this guy at home, you know, doing this, and he'll never, you know, hurt any real person.
I mean, it is, I've played Grand Theft Auto, you know, I'm not a big gamer, but back, I think it was 3 or 4, and I played that for days. And it does, when you come out of like an 8-hour session of playing Grand Theft Auto and you get behind the wheel of your car, like, there is just a little moment of your brain readjusting. Like, it's just normal. I don't know what the answer to those questions are. Like, they talk a lot about this with sex robots, like the idea if they have sex brothels. And it's like, well, are we going to give these robots rights? Like, are we just going to say it's carte blanche, people can go into these like robot brothels? Because what are we saying about ourselves as a society that some things, like, we're going to Westworld it, essentially? Like, you go into this area, is that the humans innately have darkness in them and need a release? Or, you know, there are people who like extreme things in their personal lives, right? And that's always about consent and having like safe words and all that kind of stuff. But there is a exchange here, two people collaborating. But if one person or one side of the thing is voiceless, then what does that unlock in the other person? I don't know. He's a dark subject.
Yeah, it's a bit of a minefield. It's funny, Grand Theft Auto we have on the PlayStation here, and we had a friend's kids over, a mutual friend's kids over here, and they ended up with some other, you know, young boys who were here playing Grand Theft Auto, way below the age that you should be playing Grand Theft Auto. I thought nothing more of it, but it turns out that like it made them heroes when they went back to school.
Oh, really?
Because I
tasted the forbidden fruit.
Yeah, they got to tell all their mates that they went to this place and they played Grand Theft Auto. And apparently it got brought up. So this is my favorite one, is the kids were in class and a policeman came to do a presentation. Came to do a presentation to the kids, or it was one of the dads was a policeman. I can't remember what the context was, but there was a policeman in the class, and one of the other kids dobbed him into the cop.
Wow, that snitch is going to get a stitch. I'm telling you right now. But why did dob him in? Is to say this kid was too young.
Yeah, he's too young.
That kid? I want name and shame.
He played Grand Theft Auto. Apparently, he got fingered in class.
That's that kid. What is his deal? Like, what kind of snitch? Yeah. Like, what? I mean, what kind of environment is that?
That's what I said to the
kid,
young boy who'd played Grand Theft Auto here. I said, that's the guy you have to worry about.
Yeah. I mean, at that age, too, like, unless it's some kind of this history, there's some beef. There's some beef between those two kids that he would snitch on him. But that seems like a very uncool thing to just tell a cop. Why would you just blurt that out, man?
Dobbers wear nappies, man.
What?
Dobbers wear nappies.
Never heard that? Dobbers wear nappies.
Really?
I don't think I've... No.
That was big at our school. Is that not a...
No, I don't think it's widespread. Oh. That's a Hayfield thing.
Really?
Maybe it has to do with incontinence. A lot of dairy you guys are drinking.
Sorry. Lactose intolerant people wear nappies. I'm sorry. I've completely got that.
Yeah, right. That sucks, man. I can't believe that that kid would do that. Have you ever dobbed on anyone?
It's funny. So during this time, we have become a nation of cops and dobbers in Australia, and there's been a lot of people dobbing people in over COVID and, you know, breaching that. And then you have that argument in your head of going, well, I guess that's to protect the broader society. So do you have a moral responsibility to dob people in?
Let's separate. I'm going to say
I'm going to say this first, and then you can stipulate. I would say, and we can unpick this and find out that it's not true, but I would say I'm almost 100% not a dobber.
Right.
I just don't think I'm a big, I'm a real, I'm.
Yeah, no, you. I would believe that. I don't think I'm a dobber. You tend to not involve yourself in other people's business.
Correct.
You're a live and let live. As long as it doesn't affect you directly.
Uh-huh.
You're not like me, who patrols the streets. I mean, I'm trying to think, like, even in a childhood, like at primary school, if I ever dobbed anyone in, nothing comes to mind. I've called, like, when I've heard, we had like shocking neighbors for a while who used to fight like cat and dog. And one night I called the police on them just because there was a child in the house and I just wanted to make sure that like everything was all right. And when the cops came around, like we heard them, because it was like 2 o'clock in the morning, the cops came around, they were screaming and yelling and slamming doors and shit. And the baby was crying. And so we hear the cops come in and they obviously separate them because it's a bit quiet. And then my phone rings and it's the cop. And he's like, hey, look, I'm here with the so-and-so. And now he's saying that she started it and she's saying that he started it. Can you tell her? And I'm like, do not call me or drag me.
Firstly, don't let them know.
No, yeah, that's exactly right. There's only one set of neighbors in this building. There's only three apartments in this building. So he had like a fairly good chance of guessing who'd called the cops. And then he was like, okay, just tell me, did you hear? And I'm like, no, kid, this is your job. You're the cops. Like, I did the right thing. I called you
also,
to come sort it out.
Also, by the time I hear it, it's already started.
Yeah.
For it to be loud enough that I'm hearing it, it doesn't just jump in. It's like have you heard the song Stan by Eminem? It starts quite reasonable, but then it gets real full on at the end.
Well, the weird thing about these neighbors was that when I saw them on the stairs, it was always like smiles and happiness. Like you would not have known. Like it was like night and day. I don't know what the issue was. They eventually moved out and, you know, I don't know what happened to them. But it was one of those things where it's like, because they say when you hear situations like that, you should not involve yourself. Yes. Like the worst thing to do is actually go and knock on the door or, you know, you just call the police and let it happen. But what they don't say is when you call the police are going to fucking phone you directly and involve you in the case. I didn't realize that that was like standard operating procedure. Maybe if there are police listening to this, they can tell me, is that what you meant to do?
I would like to think that I wouldn't walk past anything that really felt like, you know.
That's going to say, that's not dobbing. I don't think that's... I'm talking more the malicious, like, I'm going to fuck this person.
I just don't think of, like, I'm racking my, and you know.
Have you ever dobbed, like you saw your mate's girlfriend kissing someone else? No. Or you don't, wouldn't say anything?
No.
I don't think I have either. I mean, I'm sure. I feel
in
like
fact, I've got an example recently right. of that. Oh, fuck, I can't bring it up in front of you. No.
He or she.
I do have an example because right. somebody incorrectly sent me a text message
Uh-oh.
Recently that was not intended for me
Uh-oh.
And that was, would have like, was something that...
What's your moral obligation in that situation? No.
Erase the message, never mention it to the person who sent it to me.
If that person
If
that person comes to you and says, look, it's all over, they told me that they accidentally sent you a message, why didn't you say anything, man? What do you say?
Never got the message.
You lie.
Absolutely. I erase the message. I never got the message. None of my business. Don't care. Not mine. I'm not getting...
You're very good at that. About like not involving yourself. I can't help. I feel a moral obligation to like get involved. Gemma, when she wants to make fun of me. 12 years
in Catholic school. That's what that is.
That's what Gemma calls me, the priest. Yeah. She's like, you're always like tying yourself with these moral quandaries and whether or not you don't have to get involved. Like you can just let it go. You don't have to spend time on this. But I don't know. I think it is like a Catholic thing. It's like, you know, I concern myself with the feelings of others or, you know, their ability or their inability to deal with the situation. It's actually quite patronizing when I think about it. I don't grant people enough kind of common sense or maturity to deal with their own problems. I'm like, how can I help them through this situation?
Well, yeah, but also there's just, I don't know. Like, I mean, I think my attitude to life is very much that I barely can get my own shit together. You know, that who am I to be the moral authority of like to jump in and tell somebody else how they should be doing something when I don't really know how to do anything myself?
It's not, I don't do that. I don't feel like I ever give people advice because I feel like I'm terrible.
But I just mean that. In any situation, whether it was like, you know, say there was a bunch of people in the park and they left a heap of rubbish there.
Yeah.
I might possibly pick up the rubbish, but I wouldn't like, you know, dob them into someone or blah, 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 whatever. It's like there was one of the times I was down at the park and this woman thought that I hadn't picked up like after the dogs. And I was so offended because I always do. Like I'm not that person. But also if I saw somebody else not doing it, I would never ever like go over and confront them or do anything else like that. I might like even pick it up myself if I...
It's funny, isn't it? Like, you and I see the world very differently because I also would not do that. But I think that you seem to have this live and let live philosophy and I feel like you put faith in that philosophy that it'll work out. If you go out with that attitude more often than not, it works out. Whereas I always feel like there is judgment coming from somewhere. Like, for instance, I had some more stuff delivered to the house today and it's all in bubble wrap and I've been trying to be very conscientious with my recycling and I know where there's a soft plastic recycling place I've got to drive out to. And so I had all this bubble wrap, but it was a shit ton. Like it was filled with my entire boot. And the place where I go to take the soft plastic wrap, it's just a little bin. It's for shopping bags and stuff. It's not really, I should be really going to the tip, but the tip's not open today. And so I was like, well, 98% of the time I take it to the tip. Yeah. But it's soft plastic. This is just a lot of soft plastic. Yeah. And so I was walking there down the street, this big fucking giant ball of soft plastic.
Amazing, those who have the firmest views about these things are also the people who are so willing to fucking break their own rules.
That's not, but then I am taking soft plastic to a soft plastic recycling place. That's what they do. They recycle soft plastic. I'm just taking a lot.
Yeah.
But in my head, as I was walking there, I was running like these scenarios of being confronted by the people who work there. Like, what are you doing? That's too much plastic. Like, and I was like, why am I even occupying my thoughts with this? Yeah. Like, I'll just do it. I've made the decision. This is what I want to do because I can't be bothered going to the tip. I'm not going to wait till tomorrow. So you've made the decision. Just live with it. But I didn't. I just kind of like, I kept running these scenarios of like imagining like people coming out and confronting me. It's this weird sort of like battle between good and evil that plays out in my head.
Yeah, I think in that situation, what's the worst thing that could happen?
someone yells at me for dumping and says you can't dump that plastic here.
Well, but then even like even the idea that some stranger yells at you is like
not a big deal.
Who cares?
Yeah, see, I hate it. I don't like being yelled at.
Who cares if the dude from the plastic factory yells at you?
I think that maybe
or woman.
I think that's a product of you being like a stage performer as well, as you're used to having all these kind of opinions.
People yell at me. Well, people yell mean things at me.
Well, you do have to tune.
It is kind of true.
But you have to tune that shit out. Whereas like,
you're right,
I'm often like worried about
this is
what,
decades of me being a divisive character and reading what people say about me online.
But I care what the person, you know, who tears my ticket at the cinema thinks. I care what, you know, people I have a passing interaction with. I want them to think the best of me. And it's like, so even like
your self-worth hasn't been completely destroyed in the way that mine has.
Yeah, that's what I need. A bit of bloody humiliation. Will, we've got some mail to get to.
All female.
Nice one. And if you want to send us a letter, you can do that by going to tofop.com. And while you're there, why don't you check out some other great Tofop podcasts like Willosophy. Who's on Willosophy this week?
Naomi Higgins. You may not recognize the name Naomi Higgins, but I think she's going to be one of those people that you are definitely going to know her because she has a new show that is on ABC iView and will be on Netflix around the world. It is called Why Are You Like This? It is an Australian sitcom. She created it along with another couple of comedians, including Mark Bonanno, who is her partner, and he is in Auntie Donna, and he's also a upcoming Willosophy guest. And there is going to be a new FOFOP this week. So Andy Peters, who I have not had on the show for a couple of years, but one of my great mates from the US, Andy Peters, and I have been emailing back and forth about doing a FOFOP, so I'm going to record that tomorrow, so that will be up this week as well.
And Two Guys, One Cup, my club continues. Josh Earl is the guy I'm currently talking to about the North Melbourne Footy Club. And then I think coming up this Friday is Shane D'Elia, the Western Bulldogs' most famous celebrity supporter.
I mean, I think he is actually ranked higher than me down at the club. He does more stuff.
He does more stuff.
They can get free delicious food from him.
Yeah. What do you bring?
Nothing.
Yucks.
Comedy they don't like. Comedy where they sit there and go, I wish you were Carl Barron or Peter Hellier to a lesser extent.
Go to tofop.com to check out all those great podcasts. But now, here's some mail.
Or female.
This is from Molly. To Colin Fop, love all your podcasts. I have a clinical doctorate in occupational therapy, but work in pediatrics, so I am called Ms. rather than doctor.
Oh.
But now I have ordered my Tofop coffee mug to remind me I am a medical professional and as some type of doctor, endorse this podcast with the full authority of my degree and $300,000 in student loans that got me there.
Thank you, Molly.
I really feel bad. We should have given you the mug for free. $300,000 of loans. How does anyone pay that off?
I mean, it's basically like having a podcast for 10 years.
Yeah, I suppose. We'll call it even. Thank you so much. You provide a lovely vacation from the American media. Keep up the good work and the nonsense.
It would be a bit of a vacation, Molly.
We've talked a lot about Australiana the last couple of weeks.
It has. It's been very Australian focused. And obviously, wishing well to everybody over in the US at the moment.
Claire writes in, Australian horse movies is the subject.
Okay, great.
Hey guys, glad to hear you back with a new episode and discussing great Aussie films. During your Australian horse movie section, I do believe that you missed a cracker, being the Silver Brumby.
The Silver Brumby.
1993 Silver Brumby. I was sitting there waiting for that to come up because it also stars
Russell Crowe.
Russell Crowe as the character.
As the Silver Brumby.
G'day, give me some hay. I'd like a sugar cube, please. I remember watching it a lot as a child and then rewatched it recently with my daughter and found Russell being tormented and outsmarted by a Brumby over the span of a few years quite hilarious. Anyway, thanks for the laughs this week, Claire. P.S. Captain Marvel, Carol Danvers, was originally human but got caught up in an explosion with a Kree and developed powers as a result.
Ah, there you go.
So what does that mean? Like she got exploded? Is that a word? Exploded? Yeah, she got exploded with an alien and then their DNA. Comic book science does not hold up, does it? Like, she got exploded by an alien.
I mean,
although maybe the alien's DNA reconstructed her.
I reckon they probably gave more detail in the comic books than she just gave then. But I will say this. I've never seen the Silver Brumby. Have you seen the Silver Brumby?
No, I remember it in the video store, but I don't think it was a huge hit or anything. Mm. I do remember Russell on the cover. It was one of those, like when you work in a video store, often you know, there'd be some B-grade film like The Silver Brumby come out in 1993. Then 2 years later, Russell Crowe becomes a huge star. And then they re-release that video, but suddenly the artwork has changed. Oh, and so the Brumby's just this big and it's just Russell Crowe, you know, like even though he's playing like a character in only four scenes.
Well, I think, I don't know if they still do it on like Netflix. I know at some stage there was some trouble over the algorithms, but basically they would advertise to you movies with, the algorithm would recognize which star you were most likely to watch the movie, but there was some racial trouble with it. The algorithm didn't.
So they're never recommending anyone that's different to your race.
Yeah. Well, basically, because it's based on your. I don't know the full details of what ended up happening with it, but I know they had the technology to be able to do that sort of thing of going, hey, you like John Malkovich. So even though John Malkovich is like only really a cameo in this movie, you're going to get the tile that has John Malkovich on it because you're going to be more likely to watch it.
I think those algorithms suck when you are doing some kind of hate watching, or you know, like you'll go on YouTube and you'll just look up a bunch of right-wing videos and you get sort of stuck in this horrible spiral, but then for the next 2 weeks you have to put up with being sent every Alex Jones clip and all that kind of weird shit.
I've never done the right-wing dive on YouTube for that reason, because I know the algorithm gets ruined. But sometimes Amy's been away, it's obviously in the last year Amy and I have pretty much been, you know, here together for the entire time. You know, I haven't been touring, I haven't been away. I've not really had any time in the house by myself. And so she went away for a few days this week. And so it was the first time really that I've spent any time alone here, which meant that there was a couple of nights that I was on YouTube, like watching songs, you know, like that I wouldn't necessarily normally watch when she was there. And then I would do dives. And then what I realize is, you then have to spend like a week looking up other things.
Yeah,
so
to cover your tracks.
To cover your tracks.
Yeah.
So she doesn't go, why were you watching like three deep dives on Phil Collins in the air tonight?
Yeah.
I'm like, well, what I did.
I'll often do that. Like I'll just go to some YouTube channels that I subscribe to and just do like a quick, like five clicks on each kind of channel just to go, all right, get me back out of Alex Jones world and back to the videos I do want to watch. This is from Daniel. Help/advice. Hey guys, absolutely love the pod. I only just discovered them late last year. Two Guys, One Cup is the perfect footy pod. So I have this predicament in my life. My cousin is seeing a fortune teller and she is seeing things that are happening in my life with quite impressive accuracy. I have a bit going on at the moment, but no one really knows the details. It has come to the point where the fortune teller has asked to see me as things about my life keep coming to her.
Ooh.
Do I go and see her and possibly hear my future, or do I go about it in bliss and ignorance and not know? I feel all movies say you're better off not knowing. I don't know if this is a good idea for an episode, but would love to hear your guys' take on it. Cheers. I think go, but don't believe anything she says. Like if you go with the attitude of this is fun and maybe it'll help me think about the stuff that's going in my life in a different way, but I don't necessarily think she's got the answers, then sure, why not? If you think it will help. If it's going to reinforce any negativity, maybe don't.
And just for the sake of balance on the podcast, I'm going to say go and believe everything and act only on what she says or he says for the rest of your life.
Good marketing by the fortune teller. To have one person in your reading and saying, hey, your cousin Jimmy, Johnny, Jason, Jerome, Justin, Stephen, Simon, Mark, Anthony, Clark, Tobias, Jonathan, Johnny, John, Johannes, Jonas, Jonas,
I'm getting
Jonas.
A strong vibe that you also might have friends who would give me money. When I say you have a friend who will give me money, who's the first person? Who's the first person who comes to mind?
Who is the rich? I'm getting a rich friend rich of yours, a rich, friend. rich, dumb, gullible.
I'm getting a real feeling that one of your friends is going through a lot of stuff at the moment. I don't know exactly what he's going through or she is going through, but I'm getting a vibe. Who are you thinking of, and what are their numbers?
We're going to finish with an old favourite, Will. Elias. You remember Elias?
Elias, of course.
From
Top
12.
The largest horse in all of Norway.
Kicked by the biggest horse in all of Norway. Hi again, Will and Charlie. Great to finally have you back in my ear holes. To answer Sebastian's question, I am not aware of a joke or a rumour about sheep shagging in Ireland?
In Ireland, yeah. Iceland.
In Iceland, he's misspelled. Thank you. To bully the Swedes is a more common thing in Norway, and I am aware of jokes about Swedish people fucking sheep, as we established last week. It's always...
Everyone's fucking a sheep.
Yeah, that's right. But it is not as common as the Australia-New Zealand thing. Okay. More because it's Scandinavian, more sheep. More evolved. Right, so here I was thinking it's a cultural thing. But no,
just more sheep.
We've got more sheep. But there are countless jokes about people that live up north in Norway having sex with reindeer.
See? It's more about...
It's whatever your domestic animal is.
Yeah, I mean, we really should be kangaroo fuckers.
Yeah, totally.
The fact that we're sheep fuckers is actually offensive.
Anyway, I agree that we should have rumours about Icelandic sheep fucking, so I'll start spreading them. Also, doing a Finding Drago-style show about finding the horse would not be a great idea because the biggest horse in Norway died over the Christmas break. What a bummer.
Well, you know what that actually means, though.
Exhume the body.
Yeah, firstly, how?
Yeah.
How did the horse die? This might be the mystery. Is there any details? Murdered?
No.
By the second biggest horse in all of Norway. You know, like it's always the husband or the partner that is the main suspect.
Yeah.
If
it was a rival horse.
If the biggest horse in all of Norway dies, I immediately point the finger at the second biggest horse in all of Norway.
Well, he says, we still have huge horses, but not prize winning big. Mm-hmm. But it could very well be the fattest horse in Norway. If you want me to make Finding Elias, I will cooperate. That's a bummer about the biggest horse in all of Norway. That's really...
We barely had time to love the biggest horse in all of Norway before the biggest horse
Does
in all of Norway
Does he get sent to the biggest glue factory in all of Norway?
I mean, this is one of those things too, though, if you were sus on Elias's story, where you'd suddenly be like, hang on, what happened to your girlfriend in Canada?
Show us the bones, Elias.
Dig up, I will not believe it. If we dig up these bones and these are not big bones.
Yeah. Well, how do we, I mean, it's you're right. Like, we cannot possibly verify this now. Yeah. So, Elias, you're going to have to come up.
Elias killed the biggest horse in all of Norway.
He's like, oh, shit, they're onto me. I'm sorry, Daisy. I mean, what could he do now? Like, so what do they do with dead horses? Do they bury them, burn them?
Bury them, I believe. We've got a horse buried in our paddock down here.
So it must be a fairly big hole, right? For the biggest horse in all of Norway.
Yeah, I'd imagine
so. You have to put it more than 6 feet under?
I can't imagine that you do. In fact, well, the horse that is buried was, it was not our horse, and I think it was actually a donkey that might have been, but there's a kind of a big mound and like they've, you know, planted a sort of, you know, grave because it was a loved, you know, sort of, you know, pet, I guess. I don't know with horses what they would, I mean, I imagine ordinarily they probably...
Make them dog food.
Yeah, I was going to say, send them to the glue factory, as they say, you know, like, but yeah, dog food, that sort of stuff.
You're going to see
a lot of well-fed
dogs in Norway.
Exactly. big day for Norwegian dogs. But that does mean that there is now officially... A new
biggest
horse in all of Norway.
Well, that's fuck. That's content.
So Elias, your yesterday's news. Yes, we need to find. I want to find out who is now the reigning biggest horse in all of Norway. If anybody has any information on that, I would like that.
Elias continues. Funny thing happened after my appearance on Macho Fop. Mm. I have four older brothers who take much pride in being big macho guys. So when they heard that their much younger brother was in the finals for being the world's most macho man, they got offended. Mm-hmm. My older brothers over the summer made a giant slip and slide at the farm where I grew up. To make it up for them that I'm the most macho man in the family, could you please watch and react to this short video of their giant water slide? Thank you. Much love from your Norwegian friend, Elias. Well, that sounds like something we could throw up on the Patreon, don't you think?
Okay, so...
Us reacting to...
So we'll watch it and...
We'll watch it and react.
Yeah, okay.
And you can find it on Patreon. So if you want to go to Patreon, that's patreon.com/tofop. Bunch of great bonus content there. There should be a bonus episode where we do the Flat Earth deep dive. And this video will be coming soon. Thanks, Elias. He's just the listener that keeps on giving. Content creator.
I like this. This is a good idea. Okay, yeah. No, we'll definitely do that. I want to see this slip and slide.
Yeah, I know. I mean...
Because also...
But considering that we've got some doubts about the biggest horse in Norway, do you think this is just like...
Footage of like Norwegian Dream World or something?
I was thinking more, it's just like, it's just some garbage bags in their backyard. They've just taped three garbage bags together.
I mean, I've got a really good hill here. Like, you know, we that paddock build... down there.
Well, hang on. He didn't say it's the biggest slip and slide. No, he said they built a giant slip and slide.
Yeah.
We'll be the judge of that.
Yeah, just how giant your slip and slide is.
And to see us judging that, go to patreon.com.
I hope that's not how the horse died.
Can you imagine?
riding the horse down a giant water slide. Oh, shit. I'm Charlie Clausen.
I'm Will Anderson.
Long. Not long. Everyone relax.